listening to the Wrestle Havoc Podcast on YouTube, where we discuss everything in and outside of the squared circle. We talk all that goes on in the realm of WWE and AEW every week. And now, here's your host, the one that will give you a reality check on pro wrestling, Flamin' Rick, Ricky Duraeus. This is the Wrestle Havoc Podcast.
What's up, everybody? It is Flamin' Rick, Ricky Duraeus, right here on the Wrestle Havoc Podcast, here to review Monday Night Raw from April 17th, 2023. We got a lot of things to talk about right here on the show. Overall thoughts on Raw? Surprisingly, I thought Raw was actually not really that bad of a show. I actually felt, in my opinion at least, that the show flowed so much better than it did the week before. Because the week before, even though it was much better than the Raw after WrestleMania, it's still, man, those 3 hours are just a pain in the ass. I always come on this review, on this Raw review, discussing Raw, saying, like, the biggest problem that Raw has, or at least one of the biggest problems, is the 3 hours. And WWE's not going to change that. They are not. They have to figure out a way to utilize those 3 hours to their advantage. I feel like in some weeks, or I should say in most weeks, the 3 hours is just such a hard time to digest everything. And I feel like in some weeks, and this is an example of that, is one of those weeks that the show actually felt like it flowed pretty well. And that was actually pretty decent. You know, we had great wrestling on this show. We had Solo Sikoa versus Rey Mysterio, a surprisingly very good match between Seth Rollins and The Miz. You know, coming in, I thought, man, out of everything that they could have given Seth Rollins, they give Seth Rollins to the fucking Miz. Now, I'm not one of those people that says Miz cannot wrestle, because we all know Miz can wrestle. It's just the nature of the situation. I think it's safe to say that Seth Rollins definitely deserves better, because I feel like right now he's kind of getting shafted. That's my personal opinion, but we do got the draft coming up next week, so maybe he gets drafted to SmackDown. We do not know. But overall, we had that match. We had, of course, the main event, that being Judgment Day, taking on Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, and Matt Riddle. Speaking of Judgment Day, of course, the Bloodline and the Judgment Day is really the big story. They're making a deal of their own, basically to solve their problems, as the thumbnail states. It was actually a pretty entertaining opening segment, in my opinion. We also had Cody Rhodes and security. Jesus Christ, I did not turn off my ringer on my phone. Jesus Christ, it's actually connected via my mixer. But nonetheless, we had Cody Rhodes and Adam Pearce. Basically, you know, Cody Rhodes wants to fight Brock Lesnar, and he takes out all the security guards, blah, blah, blah. A lot of fans did not like the segment. A lot of fans, it kind of reminded a lot of fans of what they did with Roman Reigns back in 2018 at WrestleMania 34 and the build-up to that match, in which they had, like, security, like, everywhere, basically trying to give Roman the sympathy vote. Now, that was, I feel like, was a different situation because of the fact that they were trying to shove Roman down our throats. Cody, on the other hand, is still relatively over with the fans. I do not see the fans turning on Cody anytime soon. And actually, I was actually one of the very few people that actually enjoyed this segment for what it was. Now, if you didn't like the segment, I could understand that. But overall, I personally enjoyed it, and I thought it wasn't as bad as a lot of people say it is. I mean, let's be honest, when it comes to Vince McMahon and WWE booking babyfaces, Vince McMahon is the type of guy that loves shoving the babyfaces down your goddamn throat. And who knows, maybe Vince McMahon is booking this match. We have absolutely no idea, and this definitely seems like a Vince McMahon type of build maneuver to do. But again, it's very weird and interesting how this played out. I actually enjoyed it for what it was, and it actually intrigues me a lot about Brock Lesnar versus Cody Rhodes, which is now official for Puerto Rico in a couple of weeks at the Backlash pay-per-view. But yeah, that was really the whole gist of Raw. Overall, I thought Raw was a pretty decent show, surprisingly. I was actually not really much looking forward to it. Another thing I want to talk about is faction warfare, man. WWE and their goddamn factions. You know, it's funny how a lot of people complained about AEW, how they have a lot of factions, right? AEW has so many factions. And I remember, like, 2 years ago, I remember the thought of, you know, the reason why AEW has a lot of factions is they're setting themselves up for trios titles. Now, granted, I waited like a year and a half for that shit. But still, AEW has a lot of factions as well. You know, factions was really kind of, in a way, a lost art form, I should say, in wrestling for many years, at least right here in the States. And I feel like now it's kind of coming back with WWE and AEW. And I mean, in AEW, you got the Elite, you got the Blackpool Combat Club, Dark Order, all those guys. And right here in WWE, you got the LWO, the Bloodline, a bunch of factions, which I absolutely really enjoy, man. When it comes to wrestling, I just love factions. It's literally my favorite thing ever. I'm always a big faction guy. And the fact that we got all this this faction warfare going on, that ending overall was actually pretty awesome. I thought it was pretty badass. But yeah, we're going to be talking about all this and much more right here on the Raw Review, right here on the Wrestle Havoc Podcast, in which we discuss everything in and outside of the squared circle. Make sure to like and subscribe for more content. And as the friggin' referee would say, ring that damn bell for more notifications. Also, the Wrestle Havoc Podcast is also available on all of those audio platforms. It is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, and Google Podcasts. If you guys want to listen to the Wrestle Havoc Podcast in audio form, it is available on all of those platforms. Also, if you guys did not check out, the SmackDown review is up on the channel finally. I was originally wanting to upload that video on Saturday, but unfortunately, throughout the entirety of the whole weekend, I was very sick, and I did not really have the energy to make a video for you guys, but the SmackDown review is up on the channel. We talk about if the Bloodline's days are numbered, or is it just Jey Uso? Very interesting topic. A lot of seeds are getting planted, especially for Jey Uso, as we head towards the next couple of weeks or the next couple of months. Very interesting storytelling when it comes to the Bloodline. It never disappoints. We also got the AEW Dynamite review, which was uploaded on Friday as well, in which you talk about MJF and Darby Allin going face-to-face in a fantastic opening segment, possibly teasing to something big. Of course, that segment was also involving Sting as well. So if you guys want to check out the AEW Dynamite review, the links for both of those videos and also the SmackDown review will be in the link in the description below. Also, episode 13 of the Wrestle Havoc Podcast. Hopefully, I will be able to upload that tomorrow, because we got a lot of things to talk about on that show as well. We're going to be talking about the whole CM Punk return. Apparently, Warner Brothers Discovery is on board with CM Punk coming back. A lot of people are saying Warner Brothers Discovery wants CM Punk to come back or all that stuff. Of course, we're going to be talking about the two-hour collision show, which is definitely happening. It's not officially announced, but we know it's definitely happening. The impending roster split, the soft roster split that is happening with AEW, and why I think it's a bad idea. Because it's a situation in which AEW is literally doing a roster split for all of the wrong reasons. The fact that you're doing a roster split just to cater one guy, and it's just fucking stupid. I'll be talking about that on episode 13 of the podcast, but it's a lot of things to digest, a lot of good, but at the same time, a lot of questions and some bad. But I'll be talking about that on episode 13. Hopefully, I'll be able to upload that video tomorrow. All right, but let's get on with Monday Night Raw. Raw kicks off with the Bloodline, that being Solo Sikoa, the Usos, and the wise man himself, Paul Heyman. Of course, Jey Uso has the mic. Little Rock, Arkansas. The Bloodline is now in your city, says Jey Uso. Jey then gives Paul Heyman, the wise man, the microphone. And he says, ladies and gentlemen, his name is Paul Heyman, and he serves as special counsel for our tribal chief, the reigning, defending, undisputed WWE Universal Heavyweight Champion, Roman Reigns. He's also honored a lifelong achievement to be appointed the wise man to the whole Bloodline. And he has information, because all this information is basically history that is about to unfold. And then what happens? The Judgment Day come out. Now, you would think that this was going to be a certain type of conflict regarding the Judgment Day and the Bloodline. It really seemed that way, but it was actually not the case. They enter the ring. Damian Priest has the microphone, and Paul says, Damian. And what happens is Priest face off with Solo Sikoa. And Mr. Priest, that being said by Heyman, he shakes both Heyman and Mr. Priest, as Heyman says, shakes his hand. And as Paul Heyman stated, "Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is a very good day to be a very bad guy." Literally, Paul Heyman's the best, man. There's a heaven, none of us are getting into it. A short-term deal engineered and conceived and approved by our tribal chief, Roman Reigns. And Jay looks at Paul Heyman after when he says that this deal was made, and he's like, "Wait, what the hell? We didn't make a deal. I didn't know anything about this." And then Paul says, "I know. Our tribal chief didn't want anyone on their side except for Solo because there is no raised voices towards Solo," which is hilarious. "He wanted the Usos to be caught off guard of the enormity of this short-term deal." Wow. Even Balor, who is not that happy about this because Balor has deep-rooted anger issues about the bloodline. Now that, I actually really love the fact that Paul Heyman did mention that, because I believe it was around the summer of 2021, going into the fall of 2021, that was where Finn Balor was actually feuding with the bloodline. And of course, we had the Demon versus Roman Reigns at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view 2 years ago. So I love the fact that they added continuity right there. I guarantee you, if Vince McMahon was running this shit, he would have been like, who cares? They would ignore that completely. But Triple H focuses a lot on continuity, and I love the fact that they added that. So great stuff. Great that they mentioned that, because yes, Finn Balor did feud with Roman Reigns 2 years ago. Continuing on, he says, "Mr. Balor will put aside all his demons in the name of a good short-term villainry. The Judgment Day has a concern, a Bad Bunny concern, and Solo is an expert of confusing concerns. And Rhea and Solo Sikoa face off." And this was actually one of the best parts of the whole thing. Paul tells Jay to switch sides with Solo after Solo was facing off with Rhea Ripley. Now, I believe this is the second time that Solo Sikoa and Rhea Ripley did face off, which was great to see. I believe they may be teasing towards something. I may be wrong, but I feel like they didn't do that for like any reason. I feel like I don't think they did it for the sake of doing it. I think they did it for a certain reason. I'm not sure. But Rhea and Solo face off. Paul tells Jey Uso to switch with Solo Sikoa. And after that, he switches with Solo Sikoa, and it says, "Now this is getting to the point at hand." So Paul Heyman just wants to get straight to the point. But then all of a sudden, Rhea Ripley faces off with Solo once again. And Paul asks Rhea Ripley if everything is okay. And Rhea replies, "For now." Paul gets straight to the point, and he says, "Judgment Day needs something taken care of. Solo will handle that. They and the Bloodline have their own problems. They have a Kevin Owens problem, a Sami Zayn problem, and a Riddle to Solve problem. There's a 6-man tag team match that's going to be happening at Backlash, which is going to be Solo Sikoa and the Usos, I believe, taking on Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and Matt Riddle. And tonight, for the first time ever, Sammy, KO, and Riddle will face off against the Judgment Day. The Bloodline doesn't like extending a little credit, so they will take care of their concerns. Right here and now, Solo will go one-on-one." And this is actually the funny part. Before he actually says that, Paul Heyman actually goes to Dominic and says, "I apologize." But he says, "Right here and right now, Solo will go one-on-one and smash his opponent, Rey Mysterio." All right. What do we take away from this opening segment? I thought this first segment was fantastic. You know, with the I don't want to say sub-faction, but like not the entirety of the Bloodline with Solo Sikoa and the Usos involved. If they're going to show up on Raw, of course you're going to have some interaction with Judgment Day. And I think this is a very creative way to really interact both storylines together, even though they're still separate storylines. You're still, in a way, kind of meshing them together in a good way. And I love the fact that they kind of had an angle where, like, they kind of make a deal and, you know, they should both hold up their own end of the bargain. Two heels working together. I absolutely love it. And not only that, Paul Heyman sold this promo and sold all of this shit very, very, very well. If there's one thing that Paul Heyman is so good at, and, I mean, let's be honest, Paul Heyman is good at everything. He's good at promos. He's literally good at everything. But I feel like the main thing that Paul Heyman is good at, besides his promo ability, is his talent to just sell you on shit. Like, Paul Heyman knows how to sell you on a lot of shit. The shit can be bad, and he will still sell you, like, he will still sell you that shit and make it really good. And I don't think it was one of those instances. I felt like definitely Paul Heyman sold a good idea, and he made it work. And I think this definitely worked very well. I loved everything about this opening segment. I loved the interaction with Rhea Ripley and Solo Sikoa. I loved the fact that they mentioned the feud that Finn Balor had with the Bloodline a couple of years ago. I loved the fact that just the, you know, they're continuing the story progression with Jey Uso saying, you know, oh, Jey, we didn't know. Jey telling Paul Heyman, oh, we didn't know about this. And then Paul Heyman is like, it's all right. But really, you, the viewer, knowing is like, shit, Jey definitely is going to be in the doghouse in the next couple of months. Stuff like that really makes you intrigued. And I definitely enjoyed everything about this opening segment. You know, for a show that I am not really that big of a fan of, that being Raw, this was actually pretty entertaining, in my opinion. Fantastic stuff overall. But in our first match, we had Solo Sikoa taking on Rey Mysterio. Overall thoughts on this match? Not a bad match whatsoever. Rey Mysterio, I mean, Rey Mysterio never really stops. I mean, Rey Mysterio is still amazing in the ring, even at his age. I mean, it's not surprised. And Solo Sikoa definitely brought out a good match in Rey Mysterio. Solo Sikoa is great, and I talked about this on the SmackDown review, but the way that WWE is booking Solo Sikoa, like, everything about his booking has just been top-notch perfection. I mean, they're booking Solo Sikoa to not only be, like, literally the muscle slash the enforcer of the Bloodline, but they're literally booking this man to be a killer. And that is exactly what they are doing. Ever since they brought him up from the main roster from NXT, or to the main roster from NXT, I should say, everything about Solo Sikoa is just top-notch, in my opinion. Great stuff overall. Discussing the match, we get a kick to the knee of Solo by Rey. Rey goes for a kick once again, but then Solo takes Rey into the corner. We then get an elbow by Solo Sikoa, but then we get a slam by Solo on Rey, followed by a stomp. At this point, Solo is in control, but then Solo goes for repeated rights on Rey Mysterio, followed by a springboard crossbody. After that, we get a cover and a one count. Solo then takes Rey out. He continues to work on Rey Mysterio, and then he sends Rey chest first into the corner turnbuckle. And then he works on the shoulders of Rey, but then he elbows Rey into the midsection. And then Solo hits a devastating lariat on Rey Mysterio after that. And then he stomps on Rey, and then he sends Rey into the corner once again, chest first. After that, he sends Rey into the corner again. He then Rey manages to drop Solo face first onto the middle turnbuckle. And then Rey goes to the top, but then Solo comes back. At this point, Rey is up on his shoulders, but then Rey goes for repeated right hands. Rey at this point goes for the head scissors, taking Solo Sikoa to the outside. Once we're back from commercial break, Solo is in control over Rey Mysterio. After he continues to punish Rey Mysterio, Rey stomps onto the foot of Solo. And then after that, we get a slap by Solo on Rey. And then we get repeated right hands by Solo Sikoa, but then Solo misses the hip attack attempt in the corner. Rey Mysterio manages to hit the enziguri, and then Rey goes for the sunset flip, but then Solo Sikoa holds on, and he tries to drop down on Rey Mysterio, but then he misses. Rey then goes for the seated senton, followed by a dropkick, and then we get a cover by Rey, and we don't even get a one count. Like, as soon as Rey went for the cover, Solo Sikoa kicked out. That is exactly what I'm talking about. Again, they're booking this man so fucking strong. That alone made me intrigued. We get repeated right hands by Rey Mysterio. We get a kick by Rey, but then we get a springboard moonsault by Rey. Caught into a Samoan drop by Solo Sikoa. We then get a cover by Solo and a near fall, but then Solo picks up Rey. Rey counters with a couple of elbows, but then we get the head scissors by Rey, taking Solo to the middle rope. After that, Rey goes for the 619, but then at this point, Solo is down. Rey goes for a splash, and we get a cover and a near fall. Rey then goes for a dropkick, taking Solo to the middle rope. But then at this point, the Usos come out, and then the LWO come out and attack the Usos for the save. They both hit the double enziguri. Then we get a 619 countered by Solo. After that, he picks up Rey, but then Rey escapes. We get a dropkick by Rey. Rey finally manages to hit the 619. Rey goes to the top, and he goes for the flying headbutt, but he misses. And then Solo goes for the Samoan spike, and we get a cover. And Solo Sikoa gets the win. After the match, Solo and the Usos take out the LWO. He basically hits the Simone Spike on Cruz del Toro, Joaquin Wilde, and Santos Escobar. Basically hits the Simone Spike on everybody. And after that, Solo and the Usos stand tall. And then Solo sends Rey Mysterio to the Usos, which leads to the Usos hitting the 1D, the one and done on Rey Mysterio, and the Bloodline is standing tall. Overall thoughts on this segment, or this match itself. Again, this match was very good. I enjoyed this match. I loved the interference within the NWO. The LWO and, you know, the Bloodline. Again, and it continues on as we head towards the end of the show, but one thing that I can take away from this show is, like, faction warfare is real in WWE right now. WWE has a shit ton of factions. Like, they got Imperium, they got the LWO, they got the Bloodline, they got Judgment Day. They got hella factions right now. And honestly, a lot of people were saying, you know, they could be teasing a Judgment Day versus Bloodline feud. Who knows? Maybe that could be the case. Now, right now, it would make no sense for them to do that because right now the Bloodline is telling their own story and the Bloodline, or I should say the Judgment Day, is telling their own story right now. But maybe down the line, could we be seeing a feud between the Bloodline and the Judgment Day? I don't know. Personally, I would love to see it. I think it'd be very cool and very interesting to say. I mean, there was a lot of reports as we were headed towards WrestleMania that the Judgment Day plans on expanding. Could it be a situation in which the Judgment Day is expanding similar to what the Bloodline expanded? Granted, the Bloodline didn't really expand a lot. They only added one member of Solo Sikoa, and for a temporary period of time, they had Sami Zayn. But again, who knows? We could be seeing the Judgment Day expand. Depends on Vince McMahon. If Vince McMahon is going to like ruin shit, we do not know. But again, interesting stuff and many different possibilities. Especially with all these factions you have, it opens up a new can of possibilities. And you definitely have a lot of options. We then got Bianca Belair taking on Damage Control's Dakota Kai. Overall thoughts on this match. I thought this match was pretty good. It was pretty decent. But I will say this. The crowd in Little Rock was just flat out dead throughout the entirety of this match. Why is this match happening? Honestly, I have absolutely no idea. I could care less. But that is not to say that the match wasn't bad at all. But again, the crowd was just not really into it at all. Both lock up. We get a drop kick by Bianca, followed by a hip toss, followed by a standing moonsault by Bianca. After that, we get a cover into near fall. Bianca goes for the back elbow, but then Dakota gets taken to the apron. Then she goes for the pump kick, and then she goes for a second pump kick on the outside. Once we're back from commercial break, Bianca goes for the roll-up, and then we get a near fall. Bianca then picks up Dakota, but then Dakota counters the roll-up attempt, and we get a near fall. Bianca then goes for the blockbuster, but then she goes for the shoulder tackle and a drop kick. After that, we get a northern leg suplex by Bianca, followed by a delayed vertical suplex after that. Then Bianca goes for the cartwheel moonsault, and then we get a cover by Bianca and a near fall. Bianca then counters the scorpion kick attempt, but then Dakota plants her down face first. We then get a cover and a near fall once again, but then Dakota goes for a boot on Bianca into the corner. After that, she goes to the top, and then Bianca looks like she went for a backbreaker. I think I messed up my notes on that move, but it looked like a backbreaker to me. Bianca picks her up, but then Dakota lands on her feet, but then Dakota reverses and takes her into the corner. She tries to hit a knee, but then she lands it into the corner. Bianca then picks her up and hits the KOD, and we get a cover, and Bianca Belair gets the win. That's all I got to say about that. Honestly, I talked about this last week on Raw. You know, Damage Control, in my opinion, it has been a failed experiment. I'm not really too keen on what they're doing with Damage Control right now. I mean, Io is right now, I believe, the number one contender because she did win. I think it was the triple threat match last week. I completely forgot. But it looks like they're planting the seeds for a Damage Control split up now. If they split up, I mean, we all know Bayley's going to be on her own, but like, what is that going to leave Dakota Kai to do? We all know Io Shirai, or Io Sky, whatever you want to call her, is better off as a singles wrestler than a tag team wrestler. That's just my opinion on the nature of the situation. But again, very interesting stuff. Dakota Kai did bring a really good match against Bianca Belair. It was a pretty good match that she had, but again, the crowd was relatively dead. A lot of people, I felt like, didn't care. Judgment Day is backstage. Dominik talks about how he gladly saw Solo beat up his deadbeat dad, Rey Mysterio. And then Paul Heyman says he comes in and he asks them, satisfied? And Finn says, eh. And Paul says they better handle their opponents so they won't have any debt with Roman Reigns. And then he calls Roman Reigns and he's like, eh, that whole shit was funny. I even tweeted it out. Eh. Again, I love the pissed off Finn Balor towards Paul Heyman because he knows what he's been through and he knows like the feud that he had with Roman Reigns. Again, continuity matters, man. You know, I hate it in wrestling. Especially this is the case with Vince McMahon where like you would have like a wrestler. I can't name you examples, but like I assure you that definitely was the case. Like a wrestler would feud with like one wrestler and then a couple years later they would like team together without even mentioning the fact that they feuded together. Like I'm glad that they actually mentioned that feud that they had with Finn Balor because I can remember the match that they had at Extreme Rules 2021 where like Finn Balor like kind of like rose from the dead and a lot of people like did not like that shit. But I can remember a match that they had on a SmackDown a couple of weeks prior. That match was fucking fire. I can remember that match. And there was literally times in that match where I actually thought, holy shit, Finn Balor is actually going to beat Roman Reigns. And I remember coming on this particular show. I remember I filmed the show when I was in Portugal a couple of years ago. And I was like, man, the guy to beat Roman Reigns is Finn Balor because Finn Balor, literally, he is your Sting to your Hollywood Hulk Hogan. God damn it. 2 years later, I look back at that statement. And I'm like, what the fuck was I talking about? But whatever. Whatever. After that, we got a Cody Rhodes segment. And the first line for Cody Rhodes is, so, Little Rock, what do you want to talk about? And he talks about how he knows exactly what he wants to talk about. He calls out Brock Lesnar. And what happens is Adam Pearce comes out and says that he appreciates the spear, but he cannot let him do that in Little Rock. Nobody discounts what he wants to do, but he is not medically clear to be here tonight. And he says, well, we all respect the spear. That is Cody Rhodes. And we get a bunch of we want Brock chants, but Adam Pearce says he can't do it. He is not medically cleared. And he tells them to leave the ring. And then Cody Rhodes replies, okay, thank you for all the respect. I will leave. He drops the mic, he shakes his hand, and then Cody leaves the ring. And then he stops on the outside, but then he goes under the ring and grabs a chair. And then he goes back into the ring, and Pierce says, we don't need to do this. And Adam Pearce brings out security. He brings out like fucking 20 security guards after that. They all surround Cody Rhodes, and then what happens? Brock Lesnar comes out with his fucking cowboy hat and a big-ass trench coat. And after that, he's just standing on the stage, right? And then Pierce yells, he will give him the match, but don't do this match. I mean, don't do this now. Do it at Backlash. Not tonight. And Cody then takes out all the security guards with the chair. And he continues to take out security. And then what happens is Cody Rhodes leaves the ring. And he continues to attack the security guards that are constantly coming in. There's like literally like 50 fucking security guards like literally running in the goddamn ring. Like, Jesus Christ. Do you need that much security guards? Do you really need that many security guards? God damn it, man. And he sends one of the guards to the steel steps. At this point, Brock is still standing on the stage. Cody Rhodes run towards Brock Lesnar, but then security guards block him again. And they literally drag him back to the ring. And then Cody continues to attack the rest of the security guards. Cody comes back into the ring, and then he sends all the guards to the outside. And then what happens is Cody gets the microphone, and he says he spent the entirety of last week being all positive. He can wear his silly cowboy hat because he grew up with cowboys, but Brock ain't a cowboy. He is a coward. So, yeah, that was the segment to build up to the match that he's going to have with Brock Lesnar in Puerto Rico. In San Juan at Backlash. Overall thoughts on this segment. I know a lot of people didn't like this segment. It's your typical WWE babyface sympathy type of segment. I mean, the thing is like if this was a situation in which the fans were starting to boo Cody and like they constantly try to do this to like make Cody look good, I would have had a problem. But I don't think it's the situation like that because Cody is still relatively over with the audience and his merchandise sales like prove it. I mean, the fans love Cody regardless. Like, it's not a situation in which they're shoving Cody down our throats. Now, granted, if Vince McMahon is booking Cody Rhodes, that gives me some concern. But if Triple H is booking this shit, then I have no concerns whatsoever. But with all the reports of Vince McMahon, you know, not being quote unquote in the weeds, which I mean, let's be honest. Like, Vince McMahon has some input when it comes to this feud. He just does. You know, when it comes to Vince McMahon booking babyfaces, Vince McMahon is the type of guy that would literally shove the babyface down your goddamn throat. Like, he doesn't know how to book, like, cool babyfaces, in my opinion. And I feel like Triple H knows how to do that. But again, it depends on the fan reaction. I personally enjoyed this segment. If you didn't enjoy this segment, I don't blame you for it. But I will admit, man, this segment definitely intrigued me for the match. I mean, let's be honest, like, this match, if Cody had won the belt at WrestleMania, now, I know a lot of people are saying, you know, what they did at WrestleMania was kind of like the Dusty finish, like, Dusty Rhodes would have done that as well, which is very much true. Dusty Rhodes would have booked Cody Rhodes to lose. If, like, Dusty Rhodes was booking this, he would have had Cody Rhodes lose at WrestleMania. But I'm saying, and I talked about this in the WrestleMania review, the way the match was booked, it felt like a final chapter. The way it's with all the interference with the Usos, with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, the moment right there, you had it with Cody Rhodes. You just did. I get the adversity argument. I do. But me personally, don't you think you would have had Cody Rhodes face that adversity as the champion and have his first feud as the champion be against Brock Lesnar for those titles, considering the fact that when Brock Lesnar last wrestled Roman Reigns, the stipulation was he cannot challenge for the Universal title as long as Roman Reigns is the champion. So don't you think this feud would have been so much better if it involved the belts? That's just my opinion. I would have been way more intrigued if it involved the titles, but Cody Rhodes didn't win. So Cody, this is just going to be a flat out one-on-one match. And let's be honest, the main reason that they're going for as to why Brock Lesnar attacked Cody Rhodes is because of the fact that he opened WrestleMania. Let's be honest, that is a stupid fucking reason. That is the dumbest reason I've ever heard. Because Brock Lesnar opened WrestleMania before, but we're going to be ignoring that. That shit made no sense whatsoever. But, again, this segment alone actually intrigued me for the match that they're going to be having at Backlash. We're just going to have to wait and see what they do. But I thought the segment wasn't as bad as a lot of people said it was. Could it have been better? Could they have sent less security guards? Yes. Like, the amount of goddamn security guards that they sent, Jesus Christ, like, you don't have to overdo shit. But it is what it is. It wasn't that bad of a segment, in my opinion. But if you didn't like it, you didn't like it. I feel like it's one of those segments. You either liked it or you didn't. I'm good with your opinion either or. After that, we got one match that, when it was announced, everybody was like, what the fuck? Because this is Seth Rollins we're talking about, and, like, why is he wrestling The Miz? So we got Miz versus Seth Rollins. I don't know, man, what they're doing with Seth Rollins, man, but it angers the crap out of me. Now, maybe when we head to the draft, everything that I'm going to be saying is going to be rendered useless. But what the fuck are they doing with Seth Rollins? Like, out of all the things they could have given Seth Rollins, they give him a match with The Miz. Now, hear me out. Hear me out. I'm not one of those people that says The Miz can't wrestle. If you think The Miz can't wrestle, you're fucking brain dead. I'm sorry. You are. My argument is, like, of all people, Seth Rollins is wrestling The Miz. Like, really, The Miz? Like, I don't know, man. We all know The Miz is great at what he does. He is. But again, coming in, you would expect Seth Rollins to do something big, but again, he's just wrestling The Miz. Now, that said, the match that he had with the fucking Miz was a banger-ass match. That match that they had last night on Raw was fantastic. I absolutely loved the match that he had with The Miz. That match was a certified banger. That was literally a banger. Something about that match, man, literally sparked my interest. I was watching that match and I'm like, holy shit, this is The Miz? Like, we all know The Miz is capable of a good match. Like, everybody says, oh yeah, and people said Miz can't wrestle. No, the argument is not Miz can't wrestle, because we all know Miz can wrestle. It's the argument that, like, Seth Rollins is just given something that is just not Seth Rollins' like caliber type, if that makes any sense. Like, you would expect WWE to give Seth Rollins something better besides wrestling The Miz. You know, they really have... The biggest problem with Seth Rollins and the way he's being booked right now is, like, there's no direction regarding him. There really isn't. There's just no direction regarding Seth Rollins, especially right now on the Raw brand. A lot of people right now are saying that, you know, the draft is going to happen, and maybe he's going to be feuding with Gunther for the IC title if he gets drafted to SmackDown. Who knows? But another question that I have to ask is, what if he doesn't get drafted to SmackDown? That could open up a whole bunch of new feuds for Seth Rollins on the Raw side. We're just going to have to wait and see. But again, Seth Rollins definitely does feel directionless right now. There's no real direction for Seth Rollins. And it's a damn shame because Seth Rollins is super over with the crowd right now. Like, literally every time when he wrestles, like, the crowd just sings his theme song. And, like, for, like, the next, like, 3 minutes, that's all you hear. Seth Rollins is a fucking star. And he really deserves the star treatment that he really does. And right now, he's just not really given a lot. But that said, the match that he had with The Miz was fucking badass. But, again, hear me out. It's not about, oh, The Miz can't wrestle. That is a stupid argument. Like, The Miz can wrestle, guys. The Miz can wrestle. He's been proved. How many times does The Miz have to prove everybody wrong? The Miz can wrestle. It's not. It's just the biggest problem is, like, just Seth Rollins. Like, of all people, you're going to have him wrestle The Miz. Like, give Seth Rollins something better. That's my argument right there. But nonetheless, his match with Seth Rollins is awesome. Miz attacks Rollins while he makes his entrance. Miz then drives Rollins onto the announce table. So at this point, like, we go to commercial break. Miz is literally in, like, control throughout the entirety. Once we're back from break, Miz goes to the top and he lands into a boot. Rollins tries to hit the pedigree, but then we get a roll up by Rollins and we get a near fall. Rollins then goes for the dropkick, and then the crowd is singing Seth Rollins' theme. We get a bunch of clotheslines by Rollins, and then we get a kick by Rollins followed by a lariat. And then Rollins goes for the sling blade, but then we get a cover by Rollins and a near fall. Rollins then goes to the top, and then he tries to go for the buckle bomb. Miz goes for the code breaker, and then we get a cover and a near fall. Miz then goes for the yes kicks, and then we go for the Rollins goes for the frog splash, followed by an inside cradle by Miz, and then we get a near fall. Miz tries to go for the skull-crushing finale, but then we get a roll-up, a bunch of roll-up reversals by both men. Then we get a kick by Miz. Rollins goes for the super kick. Miz goes for the knees, and then Miz applies the figure four. Rollins then makes it to the rope, and then Miz applies it again. Miz goes for the inside cradle, but then Rollins goes for the rolling elbow, and then we go for a shot to the back of the neck of Miz. Miz counters. Miz hits a DDT, and then he transitions into a second DDT, which looked fucking beautiful. And then we get a cover and a near fall. Miz takes Rollins to the top, but then Miz goes to the top. He tries to go for the skull-crushing finale, but then Rollins counters into a superplex. After that, he hits the Falcon Arrow, and then he goes for the curve stomp, and we get a cover, and Seth Rollins wins the match. Again, fantastic match, but we need to give something better for Seth Rollins to do. And hopefully he either gets drafted to SmackDown, or with the people that get drafted from SmackDown to Raw, Seth Rollins is able to feud with those guys, because, like, right now, again, there's no real direction for Seth Rollins, and it really concerns me because Seth Rollins is so fucking talented that he really deserves to be in a top-tier program. Not only that, let's be honest. He needs to be in a fucking in a main event program with Roman Reigns. That's where he really needs to be, but he's not, which sucks. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Matt Riddle are backstage. Sami says that Matt Riddle has some ideas, but then Kevin Owens interrupts. And he says, leave the thinking to us. And Riddle gives his idea. And it looks like he's joking around. But Riddle says, like, no, I'm taking this shit seriously. I'm going to knock him out. And I'm here to kick ass. After that, we got Austin Theory versus Bobby Lashley. Overall, thoughts on this match? I mean, this is not a bad match. I mean, we definitely had some good wrestling on this show. This is no different. I mean, this match was pretty decent as well. But the match ended in a DQ with the involvement of Bronson Reed, who is currently feuding with Bobby Lashley. We get a side headlock by Theory, followed by a shoulder tackle by Lashley. He drops Theory down, but then we get a front face lock by Lashley. And then he rolls Theory around the ring, but then Theory regains control. Theory then tries to pick him up, but then Lashley picks him up instead and hits a delayed vertical suplex. Lashley then clotheslines Theory onto the outside, but then Theory comes back into the ring. Lashley then flatlines Theory to the mat, but then he applies the Hurt Lock, but then Theory escapes. Theory then regains control, but then he continues to work on Lashley. And then we get a kick by Theory, but then Lashley fights back with the right hand. Onto the outside, Lashley sends Theory to the apron, and then he picks up Theory, driving him to the ring post. Once you're back from commercial break, Lashley tries to apply the Hurt Lock, but then Theory bites his fingers. Then he sends him into the corner, and then he sends him shoulder first to the post. After that, we get a repeated rights by Theory, but then Theory drives his knee on Lashley. Theory then goes for a snapmare takeover. After that, he stomps on Lashley, and then we get a cover engineer fall. We then get a side headlock by Theory, but then Theory hits the shot to the back of Lashley. And then we get a cover by Austin once again and a near fall. Theory goes for repeated stomps, followed by a right hand and a couple of body shots in the corner. He then spears Lashley into the corner, and then Lashley runs into the corner shoulder first. Lashley then goes for the clothesline and then plants him down to the mat. He clotheslines him into the corner once again, but then Lashley clotheslines him. He tries to spear him, but then Theory goes through. And then he picks up Lashley, and then Lashley escapes, and then he plants Theory down to the mat. We get a cover by Lashley into near fall. Theory then rolls into the apron, but then he tries to hit the rolling shotgun dropkick, but then he gets caught into the Hurt Lock. That was actually a pretty cool-ass spot. After that, out of nowhere, Bronson Reed interferes and causes a disqualification. He drives Theory onto the ring apron, and then he splashes Lashley onto the post. And then he takes Lashley back into the ring, and then he picks up Lashley, but then Lashley tries to apply the Hurt Lock on Bronson Reed. But then Theory hits a dropkick onto the back of Lashley, which literally leads to Bronson Reed to continue his assault on Bobby Lashley. And then he picks up Lashley, and then he drops him down with a Samoan drop. And then Bronson goes to the top and hits the Tsunami. I love when Corey Graves on commentary like sells the shit out of that, because he really does. And yeah, that was that. Overall, pretty decent match between Bobby Lashley and Austin Theory. The involvement of Bronson Reed causing the DQ, look, I hate having DQs on television. I just do. But they're not as often as they were like a year before. Like when Vince McMahon was running the creative ends of WWE, you'd have like five DQs in one show. Like now with Triple H, like you'd get like at least one DQ like every couple of weeks. Not a lot, really. Not a lot of DQs, or maybe every week, but you don't get as much DQs as you did a year ago, which is great to see. But the thing about Bronson Reed is that, like, I love the way that they're booking Bronson Reed. I think Bronson Reed is great. But again, man, no reaction, man, when it comes to Bronson Reed. Literally, no reaction whatsoever. Hopefully they can change that in the future. We then get Trish Stratus's promo after turning heel. Honestly, man, I don't want to be really disrespectful because I love Trish Stratus. I think she's great. I did not like this segment at all. Number one, they piped in boo noises, crowd noises. And I remember as soon as she made her entrance, I heard the boos and I was like, that's piped in noise right there. Those are not real boos at all. And then all of a sudden, I just saw the entirety of their reaction on social media. And I even tweeted it out. Thank Christ I wasn't tripping. Because, like, there's no fucking way Trish Stratus is getting those loud boos like she did on that show. That was definitely piped in. WWE loves piping in their crowd noise. And I believe AEW did it as well with Sammy Guevara last year. It was fucking stupid. But again, I'm going to be going through this promo and then I'm going to be giving you guys my thoughts, but my initial thoughts, I wasn't really the biggest fan of this promo. So Trish Stratus says, "We're going to start with the history lesson. When she first came in, women's wrestling was a joke. She proceeded to change everything. She brought credibility to a non-existent women's division. There was no we, it was only her. She was the women's division. She was the trailblazer. She was in the main event of Raw, the first ever women's main event of Raw, and she made everyone care about the division. Without her, there is no women's revolution or women's main event at WrestleMania 35. When Becky, Charlotte, and Ronda were wrestling at WrestleMania in the main event, we were chanting, 'This is awesome.' We should have chanted, 'Thank you, Trish.' She changed everything. If we listened to Becky, she would say it started with the Four Horsewomen. That statement, like her, Becky is a joke. But she let it slide. But after a while, nah. Does she actually believe her own hype? She, you know, she was there when she buddied up with old Bex, and not once did Becky say thank you for opening the doors to her. Thank you for everything. And not once did she say thank you, Trish. She is very convincing, and she convinced Lita, and she was Becky's little sidekick. And Trish is no one's sidekick. This is not a sidekick, and it was getting a little sad and embarrassing. They tried to put her out of her misery. She did that. She took out Lita, and the reason she took out Lita is because she needed to be crystal clear. The person who screwed Becky out of her titles was her. Becky, do you remember that moment when you put her arm around her and she said, good try, Trish. I will get him next time. She ain't her friend. She took out the man just like that. We don't like that. She don't care because she ain't here. She ain't a nostalgia act. She, you know, she's not a your childhood fantasy. She is the greatest of all time and the most important figure of WWE, and she is here, and none of us will forget that. So, yeah, that was Trish's promo. Basically, the whole gist of her promo. I kind of botched a little bit when I was reading it out. But what are my thoughts on that promo, man? Honestly, I could easily come on here and say it was a great promo. And there were some aspects of the promo that were not bad. But when she was like mentioning stuff about like the first ever women's main event of WrestleMania, you know, she was the trailblazer, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, here we go again. This is my thing with this, man. I don't know why. It's just like when Trish was cutting this promo, I felt like she said things that like if a legend like turned heel, like if for example, like if Lita turned heel, right? If Lita was the one that turned heel, she would have said the exact same thing, in my opinion. She would have said the exact same thing, or any other, like, you know, female wrestler that was, like, a legend at one point would have said the exact same thing that that Trish Stratus has stated. So, if you really think about it, it doesn't really make this promo special at all. And I don't know why, but I felt this way, and maybe this is just Trish, like, finally like coming back to her own as a heel. And I don't want, like, look, I don't mean this like in a bad way or anything. I'm just like saying, like, to me, like, there were some aspects of the promo where it just didn't really feel genuine to me, and I was just like, okay, whatever, I could care less. I thought Trish turning heel last week was pretty obvious, and I thought it was poorly executed, mainly because of the fact that the tag team match itself wasn't even that good. But again, I was not really that too keen on Trish Stratus's heel turn. Not only that, I'm not really like just, I thought her promo was just not the best at all. It didn't sound genuine at all. I just felt like it felt a little forced, in my opinion. And that is something that WWE loves doing. Like when it comes to their promos, and this is the biggest problem with WWE, man. And even now. When it comes to some of their promos, they just feel too forced and not really that genuine. And that is the biggest problem with Trish's promo, in my opinion. I was not really that keen on her promo. That is just my opinion. But again, I just thought the piped in crowd noise didn't help at all. Again, it's just not genuine. And that's what I don't like about it. You know, when it comes to genuineness in wrestling, genuineness is what makes it special. Why do you think MJF is so good on the microphone? It's because he makes you feel what he is saying. I talked about this months ago. He makes you feel what he feels. I want the same thing for Trish Stratus. Like, why are you so pissed off? You know what I'm saying? Like, Trish's heel turn made no sense, in my opinion. It just didn't. We got Candice LeRae and Mitchin taking on Sonya Deville and Chelsea Green. A nothing match. Nobody really cared. Green and Mitchin start. We get a headbutt by Mia Yim. Candice tags in. We get a double team by Candice and Mitchin. Then we get a roll up by Candice LeRae, followed by a senton. Then we get a cover into near fall. We get a knee by Green, and then Sonya tags in. And then we get a double suplex attempt by the heels, and Candice counters. We get a senton by Aunt Sonya. And then Nikki Cross shows up in the front row, distracting Candice LeRae. When was the last time Nikki Cross was on television? Jesus Christ, I can't remember. Sonya gains the advantage. We get a cover and a near fall. We get a double suplex by both heels, and then Chelsea misses the leg drop. Mitchin tags in, and then Sonya tags in. We get a boot by Sonya, followed by the head scissors by Mitchin. We get repeated strikes by Mitchin, and then we get a drop kick by Mia Yim, followed by the code blue, not the code red, the code blue. And we get a cover and a near fall when Chelsea Green comes in. Sonya then gains the advantage, and she goes for the cover, but then gets caught by having her foot on the ropes. Chelsea then goes, she plants her down, then we get a cover, and the heels get the win. After the match, Chelsea Green splashes water on Liv Morgan, setting up a match. Crowd was dead. Nobody cares. And look, I love the heel work that Chelsea Green is doing. Like, if there's one good thing I can say about any of this, is I am digging Chelsea Green's Karen character. I don't know why, but Chelsea Green is so fucking entertaining to watch. She's just so good when she just, like, gets so pissed off for, like, the dumbest reasons. Much like a Karen would. And I don't know why. It intrigues me a lot about her character. But again, why am I supposed to care at all? The crowd was dead throughout the entirety of this match. This match was relatively short. And both of these teams are not real tag teams. I say this every week, and I will continue to say this every week. Corey Graves even called this out because he knows it's true. And I know for a fact I don't know this to be true or not, but I would assume that a lot of people in WWE right now are even thinking the same thing. Like, what is the point of the women's tag team championships? I repeat myself every week because, again, WWE tries, like, I don't want to say they try because they really don't. Those women's tag team titles have no direction at all. Like, those belts are irrelevant. And I don't want to be that type of guy. But, like, actually, no. I was going to compare it to the TNT championship. I mean, like, the TNT championship is in shit right now. But, like, god damn it, man. Those women's tag team titles are, like, the most irrelevant titles in not only WWE, but in all of wrestling. Like, those belts do not mean anything whatsoever. They just don't. Because there's no real women's tag teams. There's no tag team division in the women's division. And that's the point that I'm trying to get across every week. We got Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Matt Riddle taking on the Judgment Day in our main event. This was a great match overall. And the ending of this match was fantastic as well. First off, why is the Trish Stratus thing still on there? I don't know why. I forgot to switch scenes. Because I was so in tune of what I was talking about. But we got Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Matt Riddle taking on Judgment Day. Overall, thoughts on this match. Again, great match, great main event, and great ending. Balor and Sami start. Sami gains control. Dominic makes the tag. But then Dominic, like Dominic always does, tags Damian Priest. Kevin Owens then tags in. We then get a side headlock by Kevin Owens. Priest then no-sells a shoulder tackle. We then get a dropkick by Kevin Owens, followed by a senton. And then we get a right hand by Priest, but then Balor makes the tag. We then get a right hand by Kevin Owens. KO picks up Finn Balor, but then he drops down Balor. We get a cover and an ear fall, but then Kevin Owens picks him up again, but then Finn escapes and hits a chop block. After that, Balor stomps onto the knee of KO. KO goes to the outside, but then what happens is Rhea clotheslines KO on the outside. And then Balor takes KO back into the ring. We then get an elbow by Balor, but then he follows up with the knee. And then we get a kick by KO, but then Balor takes out Sami. And after that, Riddle makes the tag. And then we get a kick on Balor and then on Dominic. And then he takes out Priest and Balor. And then Riddle goes for the exploder suplex, followed with a Broton. After that, he picks up Balor and hits the fisherman suplex. And then we get a cover and a near fall. He picks up Balor, but then Priest tags in. We get a knee by Riddle on Priest, but then Riddle off the apron hits a kick, and then he sends Dominic to the outside. Riddle then goes for a springboard attempt, but then gets caught by Priest into a chokeslam onto the apron, which looked absolutely devastating in my opinion. Once we're back from commercial break, Riddle and Priest exchange shots. After that, we get a kick by Priest, followed by repeated kicks, followed by a rolling elbow. Then we get a back elbow by Priest, but then Balor makes the tag. Then he stomps on Riddle, but then Dominic goes for a somersault over the top rope. Balor then goes for a backbreaker, followed by a leg drop. Dominic, at this point, is the legal man. Riddle goes for a German suplex, but then Sami Zayn makes the tag. We get repeated clotheslines on Dominic, but then we get a backdrop by Sami Zayn. Balor then gets taken to the outside, same as Priest, but then Sami is on the top, but then Dominic comes in. We get repeated shots to the back of Dominic by Sami Zayn. Sami then goes for a sunset flip powerbomb, but then we get a cover engineer fall. Sami then goes to the top, but then Rhea Ripley comes in and pushes him off. After that, Dominic off the top hits the frog splash. And then we get a cover engineer fall when Kevin Owens makes the save. And then Balor goes for the dropkick on Kevin Owens, but then we get a knee by Riddle on Balor. After that, Priest flatlines him, and then Sami clotheslines him onto the outside. And then Sami runs the ropes, but then Rhea Ripley interfering once again, as she always does, grabbing the boot of Sami Zayn. The referee sees it and then kicks her out. We get a roll-up by Dominic into near fall, but then Sami Zayn immediately goes for the blue thunderbomb. After that, we get a cover into near fall. Kevin Owens then tags in. He goes to the top, and then he hits the Swanton Bomb, but then Dominic gets the knees up. Balor then goes for a shotgun dropkick. After that, Balor goes to the top, but then he misses the coup de grace. Then we get a stunner by Kevin Owens on Balor, but then we get a stunner on Priest. Balor then gets hit with the Helluva kick. After that, Riddle makes the tag. He goes for the floating bro. After that, we get a cover, and the baby faces, that being Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and Matt Riddle, get the win. But then after the match, immediately, the Usos come in and attack all of them. But then Rey Mysterio and the LWO come out. They all attack the Usos. Literally, the brawl is just spoiling everywhere. Rey goes for the 619 on Dominic, but then Kevin Owens drives Priest onto the announce table. And all factions, all sides, are literally brawling with one another. And the show ends. Overall thoughts on this match. Again, very good match. Of course, Judgment Day did not hold up their end of the bargain. Could this be a sign of maybe a potential feud in the future? We do not know. But we know this for a fact. We know that Judgment Day and Bloodline ain't touching one another for a while because they got their own problems going on right now. But again, man, could that be a potential feud in the future? We have no idea. But as of right now, I don't think that's going to be the case. But that ending, man, again, faction warfare, gang warfare, whatever you want to call it, I like it. I absolutely like it. When it comes to wrestling, at least me personally, a lot of, you know, when it comes to wrestling, you have your own taste. But for me, when it comes to wrestling, I absolutely love factions. Factions are literally my cup of tea. So honestly, the fact that we had like all this, you know, just mayhem going on at the end, that is the type of shit that we need to see at the end of Monday Night Raw. We see it a lot on AEW Dynamite, and we see it sometimes on SmackDown. But again, man, faction warfare is exactly what I like, and hopefully that could lead to something big into the future. But yeah, that was Raw from April 17th, 2023. Overall thoughts on this show. I thought the show was actually pretty decent, in my opinion. You know, it wasn't the best show, but it was definitely better than last week. I will say this, the show definitely flowed better than last week. Because yes, last week's show was better than the Raw after WrestleMania because that show was god-awful. But again, this show flowed better than last week. Last week definitely had a lot of shit on the show that just didn't matter at all. I'm not saying that this show also didn't have a lot of shit that didn't matter, but it did. There were some matches that didn't really make sense, like Seth Rollins and The Miz. Why is that match happening? Yeah, the women's tag team title match, or the women's tag team match, I should say. Why was that match there? Bianca Belair versus, you know, Dakota Kai, like, nobody really cares. But honestly, I mean, not really that bad of a show in my opinion. You know, I've personally seen way worse. But this show definitely flowed much better than any other Raw. Does that mean that Raw is going to be flowing better next week? Honestly, my God honest answer is no. I think we're going to go right back to square one for next week. But next week we do have the WWE draft, I believe. I believe we have the WWE draft next week. I'm not sure. I completely forgot. But yeah, man, that was my Raw review overall. It was not really that bad of a show. Most things that I liked on the show, but there are also some things on the show that I didn't like. But nonetheless, pretty good show overall. But yeah, that was my Raw review from April 17th, 2023. Please like, subscribe, comment down below, push that bell for notifications, and be on the lookout for more videos right here on the Wrestle Havoc Podcast. Right here on YouTube, in which we discuss everything in and outside of the squared circle. Make sure to like and subscribe for more content. And as the freaking referee would say, ring that damn bell for more notifications. And as always, it is Flamin' Rick, Ricky DeRays, signing out. Peace.